Blog Talk Radio.
In much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here are your hosts, Jay and Dre. Y'all know what time it is. It's time for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, here with you live on a Wednesday night, September the 26th, 2018. I'm Dre, he's Jay, here to recap week 3 in the NFL. Always something going down in the league. And this week it was all about the helmet rule once again coming into play, the late hit rule, the falling down on the quarterback rule, whatever you want to call it. That was an issue. The Messiah goes down with a horrible knee injury, and the craziness out in down in Atlanta with New Orleans against the Falcons, just the craziest game. I got to watch all of that back and forth, and it was just amazing. A display of offense, the likes of which the league probably wants to see with all their teams at some point eventually. Jay, what stood out to you in this week 3 of major news stories?
Well, there's a lot of places to start, right? And the one place that I'm going to start is the place that you didn't mention. I'm going to start up here in Minnesota, where I don't know if you're aware, but the Buffalo Bills pulled off something that has never happened in the history of sports gambling. I don't know if you heard this stat, but no team ever had been more than a 2-touchdown underdog and won by more than 2 touchdowns in the history of sports gambling since they started setting lines. What happened up in Minnesota with the 16.5, 16, 17 point underdog Bills going up and completely housing the Minnesota Vikings. And basically in every facet of the game. I mean, they were coming after Kirk Cousins. They strip sacks early in the game, getting into the end zone. Josh Allen, for, you know, being the project, he certainly wasn't lacking in enthusiasm. And he's going to probably – I mean, he's going to make a ton of mistakes in this process, but just the raw athleticism that he displayed at times, able to scramble at one point. I mean, again, he hurdled Viking defenders. You know, he must have thought he was a regular Jimmy Garoppolo when he was out there, you know, but breaking contain, making plays with his arms, you know, had the Vikings completely on their heels the whole game. And what looked like an absolute blowout, although you and I both had the Vikings in the big points, but still didn't feel confident enough to lock it down. I gotta give all the credit to a team that we completely left for dead. They were the FedEx mail-it-in team. The week before, they had a dude retire at halftime. Just did not want to be on that team anymore. Was done with football. The Bills sucked the life out of him, and they go up to Minnesota and pull off an incredible upset, propelling your Bears into first place.
First place, Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not have the time to do the research, but that upset of Buffalo by Buffalo of Minnesota prompted a question in my head. I need to go back before I will have done it before we have our pick show for week 4. On Saturday, I need to go back and see what is the record of the top 4 or 5, or maybe more, depending on how much research I feel like doing, the biggest 3, 4, 5, 10 point spreads in the first 3 weeks of any season. And of course, I got all these records of our picks going back, you know, 10, 12 years or so. And my theory is I want to know if we're putting too much, we the betters are putting too much emphasis on certain teams so early in the year. Is it something that every favorite over 10 points, over 12 points, over 14 points in the first 3 weeks of the year, do we need to look at all of them and maybe just take the points and take the underdog? Because I need to go back and figure this out. I'm thinking about all the biggest spreads of this year. I can look at this year quick while we're live on air because I have this year's Excel sheet open. But from just thinking about it, the biggest spreads this year, I think, have all gone to the underdogs. We haven't had that many double-digit spreads, but I don't think the favorites have been covering too many of these spreads. We got this week was the only double-digit for this week. Last week, the Rams were 13.5-point favorites against Arizona. That they covered. They destroyed Arizona.
Yeah, that was worthy.
But New Orleans was a 10-point favorite against Cleveland and did not cover that. Then week one, the biggest spread, of course, was New Orleans by 9.5 over Tampa, and Tampa beat them straight up. So that's a working theory that I'll do the research and get more into later on. The biggest spreads this early in the year, do they come through or do we need to look at all of them skeptically? Because I wonder if that's Minnesota overlooking Buffalo. I wonder is that Buffalo looking at the spread and going, okay, that's so disrespectful. We're going to fucking come out and do all we can to win this game and show them. Because 16.5 this early in the year is ridiculous, and we both should have known that, but we didn't. And Buffalo played like they were personally insulted by the whole thing, and maybe they were.
Yeah, and you know what really happened? Sometimes it's just the game within the game. So we don't know all the possible outcomes of anything. We only know what we see. And the Bills came out. They took the first possession. They drove down. They got a touchdown. Then all of a sudden, on like two of the next three drives, might have been two drives in a row, Kirk Cousins gets strip sacked deep in his own territory, and you're staring up at the scoreboard and it's 17-0. And I don't care who you are, that's difficult. it's not a great position that you want to be in, but the Bills, they just kept coming after these guys. And Josh Allen is too young and too dumb and just out there balling and making incredible plays, running around, taking hits, jumping over dudes, diving for the pylon. And the Vikings were never able to get anything going. The Vikings were so sloppy. Tons of drops. Guys in traffic couldn't make plays. And they didn't even start moving the ball until garbage time. I was watching the highlight package at one point of that game, trying to take as much of it in as I could. And it was something like the 9.5-minute mark in the third quarter was the first time the Vikings got into Bills territory in the game.
Wow.
So we knew that the Bills could play good defense. I don't think we ever really sort of knocked on the Bills for their defense. It was their defense that pretty much solely got them into the playoffs last year. So this all just makes me wonder, maybe Vontae Davis was the problem.
He clears out of the, that's maybe another motivating factor. When you have a teammate, and we've never had that, so we don't know. When you have a teammate look around at you at halftime of a game and say, you know what? Fuck all y'all. I'm out of here. Maybe that galvanizes the team and they come back the next week and decide to prove it to him. Maybe that smacked him in the face a little bit. There's all sorts of possibilities. I really didn't see too many highlights of the game. I just saw Josh Allen hurdled a guy at one point, so he really did feeling himself. I know that that being down so quick, so early, completely altered any Vikings offensive game plan because I believe Latavius Murray ran 5 times in the whole game. And I'm sure that was not the plan coming in.
They were going to some other guy out of their backfield who I'd never heard of Dalvin Cook, I don't believe, was available.
Right.
And there was another guy that was making a lot of plays for them, mostly in the passing game out of the backfield, and his name is escaping me at the moment. That tells you how great he is, right? Dude,
yeah.
Random guy, basically.
Random dude.
Random dude. It's just some guy who's coming out of the backfield. Where is it? He kept coming out of the backfield. CJ Ham. You a big fan?
Don't know anything about him. Is his brother named Eggs?
Hey!
I don't know anything about CJ Ham.
Yeah, that was the guy making a lot of plays in the passing game because he didn't have a single rush. So he was basically filling the James White role, the Corey Clement role. CJ Ham was filling that role. And again, this
was
all
did it to the Patriots on Sunday night.
Yeah, but this was all check downs and garbage time. You know, I mean, they were struggling to even get first downs late in the game. So the Bills played inspired, and sometimes you see this, right? You give that horrible team a little glimmer of hope, and they ran with it.
Yeah, like I said, I need to do the research to see if that's something that maybe is a big deal earlier in the year, that teams that are that big underdogs, like, wait a minute, people are counting us out bad, this early, maybe there's something to them rallying around that. And as far as the Vikings go, of course, we'll be talking about that at the end of the show when we pick the Thursday night or tomorrow night. They don't really have too much time to worry about what happened because they got to get on a plane and go out to California and play the best team in the league.
And you wonder, okay, was this a bit of looking ahead? Okay, maybe. But that's not the way you want to get caught looking ahead.
They should have got snapped right back into attention real quick, and it didn't seem to take.
Yeah.
But there's any number of reasons why that could have happened. How much of the Saints-Falcons game did you catch being the Vikings fan, or was that even available up there where you are?
No, I mean, but it was because the game was so high scoring, there was so much going on in there, that game got tons of cutaways. I saw most of the last bit of regulation, the entire overtime. My big takeaway from that game is Atlanta's defense is just decimated. I mean, they just
keep losing starters. Oh,
they're just missing so many guys. Now Ricardo Allen, I believe, is the neck is gone. So at what point, how many starters can you lose on your defense before you start giving up 43 points? I mean, not too many, apparently, especially impact guys. I mean, these were the guys when we talk about Atlanta, like in the season preview show, we're highlighting the guys that are all getting hurt. Like, these are the guys who are going to make the impact that turn this team into a much better defense. I mean, last year in the second half of the season, I want to say they were only giving up 17 or 18 points a game, and now almost half those guys are gone, and this is what you're going to get. So, clearly the offense broke out, but that's because the Saints defense to this point in the season has been just absolutely terrible. So nothing was new from the Saints perspective. What I really saw is just, I think the injuries on the Atlanta defensive side are just there's no way, especially against a top tier offensive team like the Saints, that Atlanta's going to be able to hang in there. I'm sure they'll beat teams that struggle to move the football because they can clearly put up the points. I think after that week one at Philadelphia, where they would put up 10 each week, they've looked more impressive. And Matt Ryan seems to really have, warmed nicely quickly to Calvin Ridley, which is what's going to happen when you've got, two guys on the other side always going after Julio Jones. So they're going to have a nice little dynamic thing going on here for the rest of the season because it's one until one of them gets hurt. Because that just seems to be the thing. Thankfully, they don't play defense. But, yeah, that was sort of the big thing. A fun game. Great. One of those just great high-scoring, high-flying NFC South games, which funny because the commentators were talking about how this is like typically the type of game that the Saints and Falcons play. No, it's not. They typically play like a 20-17 style game, even though they both normally have really good offenses and historically bad defenses. They almost always seem to play this a little closer and lower scoring. I mean, Atlanta, New Orleans unders for a long time were probably a safe bet. This game blew that out of the water.
This game made it feel like they're always tilting the scoreboard and going crazy. Yeah. But no, you're right, they're not. There's usually, I think, more familiarity with the combatants on each side, and they sort of know what each other is going to do. But New Orleans had some wrinkles. Drew Brees, obviously, spin moving and juking his way into the end zone is a wrinkle that no one could possibly have planned for. Calvin Ridley is a brand new wrinkle that the Saints obviously didn't plan for. It was a brilliant game plan by the Falcons to just use Ridley to destroy the humanity of PJ Williams over and over and over again. Because, as you said, everyone else was busy watching Julio Jones and making sure that he didn't get open. And they just took what was available, which was PJ Williams in coverage in the open field, which was an absolute nightmare. He got toasted. I believe I tweeted something like he got toasted so much he needed to be in between graham crackers. This guy, I mean, and they did not let up, and the Saints really didn't make an adjustment until maybe like real late, like fourth quarter or overtime is when they finally decided to pay attention to him and give PJ some help, and they even rotated him out a few times. They had him switching off with another cornerback. Okay, you obviously had enough of Mr. Ridley. Let's get somebody else on him. It was a fascinating game to watch. It was several times I thought the Falcons had it sewn up and had the pick sewn up for us, and I was happy for Atlanta. I was happy for Matty Ice and his 5 touchdowns that he finally seemed to have a breakthrough combined with last week and really seemed to be on his way to, you know, having maybe an MVP-type season. And then, like you said, the defensive injury started happening and the depth gets tested. And, of course, you're playing the Saints offense. There's also the factor of I wondered about which teams were going to wake up from their slumber in week 3, and it looks like the Saints woke up from their offensive slumber because they have not been playing like this the first 2 weeks offensively, not really close. And they really woke up and turned it up and coming back to win this game. There's also the matter of the jinx of me because going back to Shohei Ohtani and the way I hyped him up and Alex Reyes, the Cardinals young pitcher, and the way I hyped him up, as much as I talk about other defenses in the NFL, there's only one defense that I listed every single person on the defense before the season started on this show as a way of pointing out, hey, show me the weakness here. Show me where the weak link is on this defense. And that defense would be the Atlanta Falcons. And here we are 3 weeks into the season, and 4 of those pieces have gone down to injury already. That is on me. I apologize to the Falcons organization. I apologize to Arthur Blank. I apologize to the entire city of Atlanta. I apologize to Dan Quinn. And I apologize to all those individual players for putting the whammy on them. I'm sincerely sorry. And I had to watch the overtime injury this week. It wasn't Alford. It was who got hurt in overtime that I saw. I had to watch that happen live.
Wasn't that Ricardo Allen?
Ricardo Allen popped his Achilles right in front of him.
Yeah.
You know, right as I'm watching, I'm like, oh, that's an Achilles. He's done. You could just tell right when it happened that it was real bad. So it gets worse and worse for the Falcons, and I don't know how they're going to overcome. They got the guys to fill in and overcome a few of those spots. You know, maybe 2. But you keep losing, especially out of the secondary, especially in that division with New Orleans and Carolina and now Tampa Bay apparently is high-flying too. Just devastating. But it takes away from what they did with Ridley, and it almost, I don't want to say discredits, but it almost makes it seem like, well, can Drew Brees and the Saints really do something like that again, which I think they can, but it sure makes it a lot easier when the other team is losing defenders against you.
Yeah. I mean, and important key players. I mean, and that's why I took away from that game was Atlanta just, they had, and in that overtime, you could just see they had nothing left. They had no way to stop the Saints because they just, even when they were trying, they just, the Saints were just going to march right down that field. You just knew it because after you had just watched it happen in the fourth quarter to come back to tie the game, and you know, Atlanta's just losing people, then they lose another guy in overtime, and it was just, yeah, it was too much. I think that Falcons defense is full strength. I think they handily win the game, but there's no way we're ever going to know that now.
They have the overtime, of course, when they're showing the game, they have the coin flip live most of the time for the overtime. The loud groan down at the Mercedes-Benz Dome, the loud crowd groan when New Orleans won the coin toss, that was something. I felt that in my soul when they groaned. They knew. They could tell. There's no way they're getting the ball back. No way. And sure enough, the Saints go
and I was watching that, and I called the last play. I'm like, oh, Drew Brees is just going to dive over the top. How does everybody not know that? That's the only play that they were going to run was Drew Brees doing that little jump up and poke the ball over and then pull it back. It's almost an indefensible play.
That's the thing, is they probably did know, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it just I'm starting to wonder if the Falcons have pulled some of their training staff from the Anaheim Angels.
Hmm.
Or should I say Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim?
Anaheim of Orange County of California. Only if they sent Ricardo Allen back out there could you accuse them of being the Angels.
Okay. No, then I'd accuse him of being Hugh Jackson.
he's okay. Get back up there. Rub some dirt on it. Yeah, so we got to get to the Messiah, Garoppolo, and all of the hype and all of the love that the 49ers were getting before the season began, and now, it's over. Season's over. The ACL's blown. Moment of silence for Jeanine Garoppolo. Of course, a couple of things to take away from that. First of all, is we get the last time to play for the Messiah. We get so that's the last time we'll hear that this year. And now taking over for the Messiah would be C.J. Beathard for the rest of the year, who has his own theme music that you've already uploaded. Every time you have to start C.J. Beathard for a game, that's the song that's going off in Kyle Shanahan's head.
Yeah, when I saw that they were trying out Tom Savage this week, I believe I saw. Dude who wants to play NFL quarterbacks, you know, so infrequently that he would get himself concussed on purpose by just diving headfirst into the line. That guy, they called him. Well, obviously they can't call Kaepernick.
No, clearly.
Yeah, that's one franchise I will give a pass for not calling him.
They've been there, done that.
I just want to know how, if anybody ever does sign Kaepernick, how the announcers are going to be able to say his name without being like muted out or bleeped out like they do in Madden now.
I don't know. His name is a curse word, apparently. So I don't know how you get away with that.
Here's the snap. Beep. Drops back to pass. Oh, the coverage is breaking down. Beep. Takes off. Wow.
Maybe he'll come back under a wrestling mask and he'll be quarterback X.
They'll have the name on his jersey all fuzzied out. You know,
yeah,
like he's the dude
sleeve.
Answering the door on Cops.
The naked boobies on the Spice Channel. You'd be all scrambled.
Yeah.
You can't. It's obscene. it's an obscenity. You can't see it.
The 49ers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're not quite mail it in. You know, they're going to try. And C.J. Beathard, you know, did play okay in getting them to that one win before Jimmy Garoppolo came back. But, oh, man, San Francisco 49ers.
Now I'm done.
Yeah, yeah, I completely concur with that. You have another rant about the injury in you, possibly, because you were just railing, I believe just last week, against people making stupid moves out in the open field trying to get an extra yard. And that's exactly what Messiah was doing.
Yeah, and not just that. He reaches the point of the decision point, right? Did you see the play?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure how much you were able to see, but he reaches that decision point. Do I step out of bounds or do I lower my head down into five defenders? And at the moment he decided to plant off that leg and lower the head into the defenders, the body said, nah, no, you're not doing it, Jimmy. And he just basically just flops over, and then the dudes tackle him. But the knee went out on the pivot, and clearly his body was taking him one direction. His brain was, anyways, taking him out of bounds. And then just the stupidity took over and said, "Nah, man, I'm Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, I'm the savior of the 49ers. I'm going to sit."
It's the competitive instinct.
And he was playing for his life that whole game. I mean, the sidearm throws, he'd have three dudes jumping on him, and you'd just see the ball zip out of the pocket. You know, like there'd be dudes all over him, and boop, there goes the ball, kind of like at some funny angle out to a fullback or a tight end. He was making these crazy throws just to even keep them competitive in the game. And then he goes and does that. And again, that's all, you know, that's sort of the big takeaway from the game. But for me, it's still the just completely fearless play of Patrick Mahomes. It, to me, is still the big story. He is just, there's no fear. There's no fear in the play calling. There's no fear in the running of that offense. Did you see the there was a scramble that he made at the end of the game, and then the ball just comes out like a laser beam for a touchdown. Even the announcer's like, "Are you kidding me?" You know?
Yeah.
I mean, what he's doing right now, of course, now we're talking him up, so he's going to get hurt. He's going to, you know, like Deshaun Watson.
You're talking
him up.
I didn't do it.
Okay, you just stay quiet about Patrick Mahomes because he's about the most fun there is left. From week to week right now with just the sheer audacity in that offense.
I have one note to praise him, but I'm afraid to say it now.
Don't do it.
I want to talk about him a little. I'm not saying he's going to be the MVP or anything. I'm just, I had one thing that I've noticed and others on different highlight shows have noticed. And it's unbelievable how he's so inexperienced in the game and has such great, not good, great eye discipline already. The way he looks veterans off before just going completely the other direction on a laser is like, whoa.
He's been
in the league for 8 years.
They ran a play in that game that I don't even know if a lot of like 10-year veterans could pull off, and he pulled it off to precision. Basically, he was basically like in a split backfield or it was type of a weird situation. And he faked a screen to both sides and then just threw like a little dump off up the middle of the Travis Kelce, which was the actual play call, I would imagine, the 5-yard tight end screen. But it took so long and so much discipline to develop this and sell this. Like he had to sell the throw one direction. Then he had to turn his body completely around, do a 180, sell the throw the other direction, then resettle and then throw the 5-yard pass to Kelce, who's just standing there all alone by this time because it took so long to develop. Just beautiful play calling. You can see Andy Reid is really enjoying this. Just like the, and then just Mahomes is just running this with so much precision and he's looking guys off and he's making, it has been something to watch.
A play like that, I didn't see, but when you describe it, I imagine Reed trying something like that for the past 3, 4, 5 years with Alex Smith.
Right.
He tried a lot of stuff like that with Alex Smith.
That's what would happen. He would have gotten sacked.
Well, not well that too, but also the difference is doing all of that razzle dazzle, as Mr. Cunningham might say, Gunther Cunningham. But you can't rely on the deep guys going with the
right.
defenders going with the
yeah.
deep receivers when Alex Smith does all that, because you know Alex Smith at the end of all that is not
sure.
going deep.
So
but
what you're saying is
Mahomes,
that they keep right. He'd throw it to Kelce. There'd be like three dudes waiting for him.
Yeah, exactly. The DBs would all be in the same 15-yard area, but now
right.
you got deep guys that can run them off while Mahomes is doing all that, and then they're 50 yards downfield. Now they got to come rally back to try to make the tackle. That just wears you out, man. As a defense, you're just going up and down the field sprinting with the receivers, and now you got all these dump offs that you got to come back and rally and cover. If you're not in just the greatest shape, your tongue's going to be dragging by the time the end of the game comes.
Yeah, and I still worry. Honestly, I still worry for the Chiefs from the standpoint of they've looked so incredible, right? Nobody has even come close to scoring as many points as they have. They are fairly well clear of the rest of the league right now. They are one of only, looking at up, four teams that have scored 100 points yet. So pretty sad, though, that in the NFL now we have four teams over 100 points scored in 3 weeks.
Yeah. That's
but
the league.
They have also given up a massive number of points as well. So it's not just that they're scoring in these bunches. At some point, they're going to have to stop giving up so many points. Now, a lot of these points in this game were a lot of garbage time, and there was a lot of, Jimmy Garoppolo coming back, and clearly Andy Reid could still go conservative to sit on a lead, and a lot of coaches can do that. They all don't want to hurt any feelings. He's clearly not Mike Martz. But, man, that first half of that game, I saw a lot of greatest show on turf-style offense from them.
It's impressive.
Patrick Mahomes is like Kurt Warner with mobility. If you could imagine that.
Now, if he breaks something next week, don't blame me. You're the one going on about you just called him Kurt Warner with mobility. Kurt Warner's a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah,
so
he looks like it. He's got the look.
Okay.
He's got the throw. And you can clearly tell that he's got some baseball in his past, the way he winds up and fires that thing.
Oh, that kind of helps that your dad is a former major league closer.
But just the throws don't always, like his over-the-middle throws, like his seam stuff, his crossing patterns, the ones he's just throwing out there on a complete laser beam, those look like someone doing almost like a wind-up with a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that big of an arm swing and a follow-through on that. It's not the most, on the outside when he throws, it's very compact. But, you give him some space. And that he is lighting that thing up out there.
Luis Severino playing quarterback for the Chiefs. Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to belabor too much on the Garoppolo thing. But, stop fighting for meaningless yards.
And now C.J. Beathard takes over as the man. Oh, boy. All right, less than a half hour left in the show. I mean to do the plugs every show, but I normally forget, so I'll get them in real quick here. blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. That's where you're listening live. It has held up so far tonight for the whole show, so that's another jinx that I probably shouldn't even mention. But anyway, to listen to this show and a possible after show afterwards, you have to listen to the podcast version of the show. And you can go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, and subscribe, and you will get this show as a full show, live show, and after show in its entirety, or any number of different podcasting apps. We should be on there. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Communicate with this show via email. Send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter @IMLDDre. Follow Jason @IMLDJTG. Follow our picks on the blog. Blog site is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. So in other week 3 news, I wanted to talk about the continued fall of the Patriots because I got to see that whole game against the Detroit Lions. And because I wanted to, of course, do a little bragging about having my lock shit all over by Jay last week. And the lock came through and the Lions handled the Patriots. They actually did it completely in a different way than I thought. They went coast to coast on them. They led the whole way. They were dominant. Did they lead the whole game or did the Patriots?
No, they led the whole way. I'm pretty sure. I don't think the Patriots got up first.
Now, as much as I talk about the Patriots and their terrible defense, even I did not expect them to give up the first 100-yard rusher for the Detroit Lions since Reggie Bush in 2013, I believe. That's a new low. Even for the Patriots defense, that's a new low. You got ran over by Kerryon Johnson and the Detroit Lions. It's over. That dynasty is, I'm sorry, I've been saying it, and I will continue to say it.
You're dancing on the grave.
It's over. It's all over. Hall Carrollson retired this week, and I'll do a Hall Carrollson for you. He gone. This ball game is over. Man, that team is trash. I'm sorry. They just are. I did not see anything all that special out of the Detroit Lions to make them as dominant as they were. They just played much better than the Patriots. The Patriots looked like a team that is destined to finish like 8-8 or something like that. They did not look like the defending AFC champions. They did not look like a dynasty at all. And it's funny because the announcers were basically saying before the game started, well, we're expecting this to be sort of, beyond the Cincinnati game because the Patriots got embarrassed the week before by the Jacksonville Jaguars playing an overall great game against them. And the expectation was that the Patriots are going to wake up from that and, okay, we'll just shake that off and on to Cincinnati, on to Detroit and move on and play a much better game. And the bettors thought that way too, making the Patriots a touchdown favorite. And I was like, no, they're not that good. And sure enough, they're not that good. Now, I still kind of expect the Patriots to wake up from this and win the division because the division isn't all that good. But that team right now, they're not playing good football at all.
No, and we both managed to win a lock. And I meant to ask you, that's a rarity where we both win our lock.
It seems to be a rarity.
It is a very rare thing. So, no, I definitely thought that the Patriots were going to handle the Lions. I mean, come on, the Lions. They got blown out at home by the Jets. Tom Brady and those guys are going to come in. And I clearly either underestimated the Lions or overestimated the Patriots or a combination of both because that was hideous. What they put up there. Brady got nothing going. We already know that the Patriots can't run the football. And, his receivers can't get any separation. If you were watching what they were doing, they were putting three guys on Gronk at times. I mean, they're going back and watching, and they're highlighting this throughout the whole game about just how absolutely blanketed, double and triple teamed Gronkowski was. And Brady, to his credit, is at least smart enough to not to try to force it into those situations. There was just nothing for him to get. And he hasn't been the most accurate guy over the last few years. And that often, that was a lot of three and outs, a lot of punts. And the desperation heaves at the end from Brady. It's just like you've seen it too many times where it's just he's just throwing it out there hoping to get a flag because he knows it's not getting completed. The refs weren't even calling those. I mean, it was like everything that the Patriots tried to throw at the Lions didn't work.
That one out on third that got called for or in the third rather that got called for groundings in the fourth quarter. And then on third is when he got the coverage sack because he couldn't find anybody open because like you said they had three guys doing a triangle around Gronk and daring any of those other receivers to get open and they can't get open because they're not very good.
Yeah. So very, very interesting. What we've seen out of the Patriots the last couple of weeks, because like you said, the general consensus would be like, hey, after the Jags handled them, they'd hunker down and they'd get coached up and they'd be able to go back out there and get the W, and that didn't happen for them. And hey, it didn't happen for the Jaguars either. Talk about a letdown game.
No, it didn't. The Jaguars, the heckle and jive quarterback Blake Bortles struck again, and
yeah,
he didn't play anywhere.
Yeah,
exactly. And he didn't play anywhere near as well against the Titans as he did against the Patriots. And I wanted to give props to Marcus Mariota for that game, for the Titans win that neither one of us saw coming, because Mariota was not supposed to play in that game. They were holding him out again, and Mike Vrabel was doing his best Belichick and being very secretive about the whole thing, being very clandestine. But Blake Bortles gets the start, gets his bell rung a couple times, got the stuff knocked out of him, and they had to bring in Mariota to play quarterback with a bad arm because they had no third quarterback on the roster. And that was special to watch the Jaguars basically get faked out by the entire Tennessee Titans game plan and the entire offense. The league's best defense objectively, subjectively, I guess is what I was trying to say. I got turned around there, but subjectively, the league's best defense, the Jacksonville Jaguars, got faked out by the Tennessee Titans because you really didn't know until the end of the game that Mariota had an elbow so bad that he couldn't really throw deep. But they sure as hell kept acting like he was about to throw deep. They kept running play actions and, oh, he's winding up. Here he goes. Oh, look, he checked it down to the running back again. Oh, there's another play action. Here he goes. Oh, he's taking off and running.
Yeah.
They stretched out the Jags enough to work within whatever area was left open underneath. And they just kept doing that the whole game. And it didn't get him any touchdowns, but it got him enough points to win the game. And that was kind of impressive, the fact that the Titans were able to sort of fake out the Jags the whole game. So
and
the Jacksonville offense just was just struggling the whole way.
But for the Titans, though, this is 2 weeks in a row now where you look up and the end of the game, and they won. And it was the games were terrible to watch, and you didn't think they had much of a chance. It was Blaine Gabbert 1 week?
Yeah.
We kept calling Blake Bortles, but Blaine Gabbert 1 week, Marcus Mariota, who couldn't throw the next, and they held the Jaguars, who had just pretty much just – beating the Patriots like a drum, they hold them to 6 points. That's now, what, three or four in a row now for Tennessee over Jacksonville. So who knows? Maybe this is like a Philly-Atlanta situation or, maybe the Titans just have their number of the Jaguars. But if it hadn't happened in Chicago 30-some-odd years ago, I'd say that we need to brand the Titans as winning ugly.
They're definitely winning ugly right now.
That right there. Was that 83? Was that those 83
yeah.
White Sox? Yeah, the winning ugly white. The Titans are winning ugly because that is 2-1, and it ain't pretty, but a win's a win. I mean, and that's also a win over the team that they're supposed to be contending with in the division, maybe down the road. And I don't know if this is going to last for the Titans. How long can they slap this together? They're going to need points to win at some point. They're not going to win all these games. 9-6 or, 20-18 or whatever these, they're going to need some offense eventually. And I expected that offense to be better. They brought in an offensive coach. The defense is bailing them out right now. The new and improved defense, which is also something that we spent some time talking about during our season preview, that the Titans did plug some holes on that defense. And so far it's showing.
That was one of the factors in why the Jacksonville offense looked as bad as it did. There wasn't any pressure against the Patriots. Bortles had time to do anything he wanted. Tennessee got a hell of a lot more pressure, so that was a factor. Bortles was bad. He made some bad throws,
yep.
But it wasn't all his fault. He got pressured a lot. Some of his guys dropped some balls. He got off some good throws, and some of his guys had some bad drops out there. And his offensive line was committing penalties. So it was pretty much a mix of everything you could imagine for the Jaguars coming off of such a an emotional win over the Patriots. That also, along with Minnesota, might have been a case of just underestimating an opponent and not giving your best effort.
Yeah, I mean, for the Vikings, it could have been a case of looking ahead to the Rams, and for the Jaguars, a case of, you know, the sigh after they beat the Patriots, you know, and they slayed the dragon and they're victorious and this is going to be easy. Yeah, no, it's not that easy in the NFL. This isn't college. That's why I like the pros so much more than college ball, because they're, you know, more so in the NFL than you can really say in college. You do have the any given Sunday mentality, and that's how the Bills end up, you know, being 16.5 point underdogs and just wiping the floor with the Minnesota Vikings, and the Titans left for dead with no quarterback. You know, they're getting their best offense. They're getting their most quarterback production from their safety. And they beat the Jags. They beat the team that we both have going to the Super Bowl.
There's occasionally a 16.5 point team in college that pulls the upset and gets the win. But the difference between that and the NFL is, for every one of those in college, there's 40 or 50 16-point dogs that get curb stomped. And
yeah,
that doesn't happen in the NFL.
And you don't see 45-point underdogs in the NFL.
Well, yeah, that's a whole different. That's,
you know,
another
60-point underdogs. Yeah, I mean, and just the fact that you could be like a 60-point underdog and look at that and go, well, I don't know. I might need to take, you know, give those points. I was like, oh boy, that is college football. We have very rarely eclipsed a 20-point spread. It's memorable when we get into the 20s in the pros.
Yeah, those dominant Patriots teams, the one that almost won, that almost went completely undefeated.
Yeah,
springs to mind. But yeah, it's very, very rare.
So. Yeah, we've hit on a lot of them so far. So we keep going here. What else we got?
The Steelers woke up from their slumber on Monday night and held down.
We called that.
Yeah, and boy, turnover. Bernie Sanders reared his ugly. But some of those throws. Ooh.
Yeah. I even texted you during the game. Bernie's back. You know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, they The Buccaneers were not, you know, the top, those first 2 weeks, that wasn't what the Buccaneers were all about. And those first 2 weeks were not what the Steelers were all about. And that one, you got to give a little props to the betting public for having the Steelers as the favorite. They knew, but that's also a little, I'm sure there's a lot of it's the Steelers that goes into that as well, that Pittsburgh is always going to get people betting and putting a lot of money on them just because they're Steelers, but they came through. They did what they had to do.
You know, for Fitzpatrick, he kind of got the best and the worst out of him in that game. I mean, he dug them into the hole and damn it, he almost dug them out. So,
sure.
You know, but clearly the whole offense is the throws that he was making and the catches. It wasn't the throws, it was the catches. So the offense is just chuck it out there and let Mike Evans go get it. Because there were plays that Mike Evans was making on the ball where there were like two Steelers around, just like, you know, like they're the Three Stooges out there. They had no idea what was going on. And Mike Evans is just catching the ball in complete traffic. And he's throwing it out there. And the guys are making plays. I guess that's all you can ask, but there wasn't any precision to some of it. It wasn't like he was just dropping dimes.
No.
So a lot of it is
dropping dimes.
Yeah, a lot of it is just, you know, go out there and you're losing big. So it's not, you got nothing more to lose. And then they started connecting on some of these plays. But they did almost come all the way back, because we know that the Steelers' defense isn't very good either.
No.
And I wasn't sure that if the Steelers hadn't converted on some of those third downs late to seal that up. And one of them was like a Roethlisberger had to kind of like scramble away from the pressure. I think that was the one that iced the game, kind of throw back across his body. If it hadn't been for that play and then they had to punt the ball back, I'm not sure that Pittsburgh wins the game.
It was a furious rally at the end. I thought it was over and had kind of given up on it, but they did make an effort. But yeah, that Steelers defense will allow you to come back into a lot of games. But at least the offense put it together for one game and did what they were supposed to do. Did I hear you call some of those Buccaneers players the Three Stooges there?
No, those were the Steelers defenders.
Ah, okay.
Those were the,
Now it's time for the classic comedy of the Three Stooges on Channel 32.
I can't resist the urge to go back to when we were 5 years old and play the old Three Stooges introduction music.
From Channel 32, WFLD.
That's Chicago, folks, in case you didn't know, in case you couldn't tell from the accents, we're from Chicago.
Can't go more than a few shows without getting a little Chicago on our show. We already had the Winning Ugly reference. I'm sure a lot of people got that one.
Yeah, Google Winning Ugly, and I'm sure that's what'll come up, is those 83 White Sox.
Those hideous mid-80s Sox unis.
I love those. Those are classic with the big socks.
They're classic because that there's the classic because that's what you grew up with. But those are some hideous uniforms.
Perhaps. They bring out good memories when I see them. That's all I know.
Yeah. And then when they rebranded to the black jerseys with the, you know, the more like sort of like almost like medieval lettering, when they went to that jersey, that all of a sudden they became like the most popular one in town again. Just like Raiders fans, I didn't realize that was like a gang thing.
Hey, whatever works.
It fit the gang colors.
They went through so many different changes and logos. They had the curly white C at one point. They were just struggling. They're just trying to find anything that worked, and they went to that. To what they got now, that Sox script with the black cap. Yeah. They went to that because that's what they had back in like the 50s. So they were just dredging up something old to see if that would work. And that stuck.
Because not the Cubs wouldn't look good on a jersey.
The Chicago, not the Cubs?
Yeah.
As I've already said many times on this show, that's not the Chicago White Sox. That's the Bridgeport White Sox. That's the only place that...
Well, see, if they wanted to fill the stadium, they could have just said they could have had the Northside Cubs, and then the Sox could have been the Southside Cubs. See?
The Southside Cubs. I'd love to see Reinsdorf try to pull something like that off, but I don't think he would have the guts to try that.
Cubs are in a fight right now, so it's interesting here. They backdoored into the postseason tonight, but they had to eke out a win in 10 innings today after they blew another late lead. So interesting going on with baseball. I'm sure we'll have some baseball talk here eventually as we get into the postseason.
Playoffs start next week. Absolutely.
Yeah, playoffs for some of these teams are starting right now.
Right. It's pretty much this weekend is they're playing playoffs already. Yeah. Now and going into this weekend.
Yep.
I needed to point out that you said that we were going to possibly get trapped looking at the Denver Broncos as 6-point dogs at Baltimore. we got to take those points. The Baltimore's not that good, are they? The Broncos, they bring a real defense, and they're going to go over there and give – Joe Flacco, and then they're going to give them all they can handle, and we got to go with the Broncos.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out.
Yeah, we got it on both ends.
That's 2 weeks in a row now where I've actually called the trap, and we've still walked right
still
into
fell
it.
In it. Yep.
Yeah, we're in the woods with both our legs now caught in bear traps. just flailing to survive. I'm gonna have to chop off one of my feet with like a Swiss Army knife or something, so I can get out of these bear traps that we keep falling into. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I have this uncanny ability so far this season to see the trap and dive headfirst right into it.
We really got to stop doing that. We got to figure out a way to, when we see the traps coming, to point it out, say, that's a trap, and then avoid the trap.
The van with free candy written on it doesn't actually have free candy.
That's called a trap. We need to avoid that. Don't go into the van, little boy.
Man. This is 2 weeks in a row. So I'm going to start trying to take my own advice and not fall into the obvious traps that we keep setting for ourselves.
And then finally, before we make our pick for tomorrow night, a lot of weird vibes, a lot of flashback feelings when you see the Chicago Bears go down early in Arizona and you're like, well, this one might be over. And all of a sudden you look up and somehow the Bears have come back and won. Wait, how did that happen? What, Dennis Green, what do you think of that?
Coach, four picks against Grossman and two fumbles. What did you see about the Bears? We shut them down that way?
No, the Bears are what we thought they were. What we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes the third game in a preseason like it's bullshit? Bullshit. We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
So, crown the Bears, crown Khalil Mack once again, running things on that defense. Crown the first place Chicago Bears. Crown end the season now. Give the Bears the division title now. It's over now.
Yeah, you know, looking at that division, I still think that the Minnesota Vikings, despite what just happened this last week, are going to still have something to say about that in the final analysis. But for right now, 2-1, you're looking pretty good.
That's why I'm saying, end the season now, please. I don't want the season to go any further.
The defense is clearly legitimate. We've known that. We knew that their defense was good before they signed Khalil Mack. He's taken them to a whole new level. They needed every bit of that defensive magic to eke out a win against the Cardinals. I do think that is Bruce Arians still the coach down there for now?
No, they threw him out last year.
So who's down there now?
Oh, they got this guy Steve Wilks. It's his first job, and you can tell it's his first job.
You can tell it's his first job because he waited way too long to pull the trigger on Sam Bradford.
Hey, Josh Rosen, game's on the line, fourth quarter, get in there, kid.
Not the time you put him in. At that point in the game, when you actually need some veteran stability, you probably are better off rolling with the game manager to try to get you down into field goal position. Nope, they tried to roll the dice, and Rosen, and he looked okay, but he threw the pick, and that sealed it up. But, you know, up until that point, you could see that there was a little spark there. But not that Baker Mayfield level spark where they did the move at halftime. So yeah, not the spot. Maybe he thought that he could recapture the magic that other teams had. Oh hey, it worked for these guys. No, not the time you go to the bench. Sorry.
Nice try. All right, time to pick the Thursday nighter. Tomorrow night, the Minnesota Vikings will try to rebound off of whatever the hell that was against the Bills on Sunday. And for their troubles, they get 3 days of rest, and then they have to go on a plane out to California, face the possible best team in football, the 3-0 Los Angeles Rams, looking as only they can look. And so as a result, no surprise with the spread, the 1-1-1 Vikings. With Kirk Cousins, are 7.5-point dogs at the 3-0 L.A. Rams with Jared Goff at the helm. Jason, who you got?
Yeah, this one's tough because I do believe that the Rams are artificially giving an extra couple of points just because of the fact that the Vikings just lost to the Buffalo Bills. I'm still going to give the 7.5 with the Rams here. I mean, this is a team through three games that's given up 36 points. And they're playing a Minnesota team that I think is reeling after a couple of really tough games here to start the season. They haven't looked that great in any one of their three matchups, and the Rams are rolling. They're hitting on all cylinders. Give me the Rams and the points.
I'm going to have to concur. I'm a little afraid of it because of how good of a team in general the Vikings are, a good quality team, and the defense may get angry and rise up. and have something to say about what Jared Goff and the Rams are doing. But, yeah, the Rams look unstoppable right now. What did I do last week? 8-8, 9-7, something like that. I was 8-8, you were 9-7. So I'm going to be a little more numbers heavy coming up. And I'll talk a little bit more about it in the after show when we come back. All right, and it's the VIP after show. Yeah, I was just going to bring up the 9.3 yards per pass attempt that the Rams are averaging right now, and they're just looking like a machine that's just on all cylinders, just clicking. Another thing that might worry me a little bit is the Rams have some secondary issues.
Yeah.
They lost Aqib Talib to injury. They may not have Marcus Peters for this game tomorrow night. But I guess I just don't believe that the Vikings are going to be in a position to take too much advantage of that. They're reeling off of this loss against Buffalo. They only have 3 days to recover from it. They have to go out on the road on the short week. Week four is a little early to still talk about the making the home team on Thursday night just automatic, take them and give the points no matter what the spread is. However, in this case, we're talking about the gut punch of coming off of being the biggest favorite of the year and losing that game, not just losing the spread, but losing the game and getting your doors blown off, only having 3 days to recover from it and getting on a plane and going to California. I think that's a few too many factors for the Vikings to overcome. I'll like them to recover maybe the next game, whatever that opponent is going to be in 10 days after this. You know, I have a little more time to recover and get over things, but this is a little too soon, a little too high-quality opponent right now for them to just recover and bounce back. So I'm going to agree with you and give the 7.5. I think the Rams will probably win by 10 or 12 points.
Yeah, that sounds legitimate to me. I mean, that sounds like a good number. And this is going to be, you know, this – well, last week we had the game that saved football part two. I'm hoping this is a good game. I really do want this to be a compelling matchup. I would like to get an actual quote unquote classic Thursday night game that actually is classic, not just bad teams playing what looks to be competitive football because it's the only thing on TV when it's a game that nobody would have cared about if it was just buried in the Sunday afternoon schedule, but now it's got more meaning because it's in prime time and it's the only thing on. This is a potential playoff preview. I mean, this is two really good teams, but the Vikings just haven't played. They covered against San Francisco, but they let them hang around. They basically needed the Green Bay defense to just completely shit the bed in the second half, specifically in the fourth quarter, to force a tie. They just got embarrassed by the Buffalo Bills. So the way things have been going this year, of course the Vikings will probably go and just, you know, beat the crap out of the Rams. But that just because everything is so unpredictable right now. But if there's one thing that's been steady through these first three games, it's how good the Rams have been on both sides of the football. See, unlike the Chiefs, the other sort of big 3-0 story, the Rams played defense.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not letting people score. And you know you've got something good going on when you are – and I don't even pull this stat out in week four. The Rams are plus 66 after three games.
That's pretty silly for after three games.
Yeah, plus 66. You're winning your games by an average of 22 points.
They are clicking.
So, yeah, things are – and, yeah, with the short week and, you know, and yes, the Rams are beat up in the secondary, but the Bills showed you don't need much of a secondary if Kirk Cousins is running for his life.
Yeah, he probably will be
running
for his life again with Aaron Donald and company chasing him.
Yeah, and I also worry that, you know, you said that the Vikings players, especially their defensive players, might be getting angry. Seems like one of their guys is already a little too angry.
Yeah, Everson Griffin is not going to be available because he's getting his head checked out, and it's not for concussions, although that might be why he's going crazy, but
it's very possible, but, you know, we have a guy retire at halftime. The next week we have a dude go insane.
Yeah, just threatening to shoot people and all sorts of craziness. So, yeah, they've deactivated him, and they'll take a look at that. That's a big loss football-wise for the Vikings because he comes off that edge and brings a ton of heat. But obviously it's bigger than football right now to make sure the guy doesn't pull a Junior Seau and destroy himself and people around him or something like
and
that.
And other – yeah, you just – you know, right now you're just hoping for the guy to be, you know mentally able and just, you know, able to cope with things. But, yeah, that was a crazy story. At first, you know, I'm reading the updates that, well, they expect him to not be available for personal reasons. Then, like, the next update you find out, like, oh, yeah, he was threatening to shoot people.
Yeah, that's pretty personal.
Yeah. So, like you said, they need to get angry. Just not that angry.
Not quite that angry. I'm feeling manipulated by you were hoping that it was going to be a really good game. Of course, it's the first Thursday nighter that they have on Fox after starting out on NFL Network the first three weeks. Why can't all the games be this quality though? Why do they got to make it a special game?
Jets and Browns when nobody really cares.
And now we're on Fox. Oh, here's Vikings Rams for you. Yeah, that's. That works.
Trying to say there's a theory. Next week we have Colts at Patriots, so you get Andrew Luck at Tom Brady, right? And then Eagles Giants. Who cares? Who cares? Eagles Giants. Oh my God. Bronco. Oh wait. Well, we get it all back when we have Broncos at Cardinals.
Ooh. Well. But they start off hot. They start off the Fox part of it hot with Vikings Rams, and that's on purpose. And
wait until week 9, this suddenly uncompelling matchup of Raiders Niners.
Yeah, they thought that was going to be a hot one.
Oh, yeah. Now we get CJ Beathard.
Oh no. CJ Beathard. Yes, I'm going to play that every time we mention C.J. Beathard because that's the last thing the 49ers had in mind this year. The last thing.
Yeah, they're completely – and we had them not in the playoffs either. We didn't fall into the trap of falling into all the Jimmy Garoppolo love, right?
Oh, and there was a ton of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had predicted that they would be the hot preseason – playoff pick. I don't think that they're 20-1 anymore for the Super Bowl or whatever it was. And can you short sell? I wish I could have short sold that.
Man, we already talked about that. I wish to God that there was a market for that. Every year, just whatever it takes, Cleveland Browns will not win the Super Bowl. I want that bet. I want it. That's just
I don't care what it is.
I don't care what the odds are.
I have to bet $1,000 to win a dollar.
I don't care if it's $10,000 to win a dollar. I want that bet.
If I could have short sold the 49ers not going to the Super Bowl, I would have. Not that many things I'm sure of, but that one I was sure of, especially as high as their odds were.
Oh yeah, it was crazy, the hype and the money being put on them and all the love. Yeah, it always did feel just wrong. The whole thing just felt wrong. And I'm a fan of Kyle Shanahan and the Shanahanigans, but he knows what the hell he's doing.
Current Super Bowl odds. So this was September 2nd.
Oh, okay.
So as of September 2nd. The 49ers were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11th. 11th!
Yeah.
The odds.
That's sick.
So that is they were plus 1,800 to go to the Super Bowl, which is ridiculous, right?
It is.
Now I want to know what they are right now. This is something I need to find this.
Odds to win Super Bowl 52.
Well, odds to win the Super Bowl 52 right now, the 49ers are 30th. So this is before the season started. Before the season started, they were 11th to win the Super Bowl. Now they are 30th.
That's quite the fall.
Only ahead of the Bills and the Cardinals.
I'd love to short them too.
And they are tied with the Raiders and the Jets. Wow.
I kind of feel sorry for any of you that had money on the 49ers, the Super Bowl before the season again. But I'm also kind of laughing at you because what the fuck are you thinking? Come on.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So before the season started, they were 11th, and they've dropped to 30th. And that's almost all on the fact of Jimmy Garoppolo blowing his knee out. That's solely on the fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
Completely. That's the risk that you take, I suppose, with gambling. That's why it's called gambling.
I never in a million years, though, would have put money on the 49ers to go to or win the Super Bowl, even with Jimmy Garoppolo. They weren't going to the playoffs.
Yeah, that was silly. So the one person at the in my bowling league tonight that brought up something football-wise, now she's a Packers fan, so of course she's going to bring this up, but she brings up what is going on with Clay Matthews, who's just got a big-ass target on his back, that every time he makes a hit on a quarterback is being flagged by the officials now, every single time.
Yeah, he's getting the Vontaze Burfict treatment.
But
without all the illegality of the hits.
Did he do a bunch of cheap shots to deserve that? I missed that.
No, he cheap shot. Who did he cheap shot? Kaepernick that time? That was bad.
Oh, years ago, yeah.
It was either Kaepernick or Cam Newton. He cheap shotted somebody on the sideline. But, yeah, I don't know how much more. And this is starting to become a sort of popular movement against the NFL. Because now it's like the fans see it, the commentators see it, everybody sees that it's bad, and the NFL just keeps doubling down like, nah.
It was legit.
These calls are right.
We have reviewed the footage and determined that our officials made the correct call. Yeah. Fuck all y'all.
We're in that same game, there was a dude who slammed Aaron Rodgers like head into the turf. No call.
Oh, we're not going to talk about that.
You know, it's not just that game. It's not just that it's Clay Matthews. Now, in defense, I don't want to defend the call or anything like that because I know they're making the big deal that he got flagged for another one. Packers weren't winning that game anyways.
Right.
I mean, they had nothing. I mean, they were giving up bombs to Alex Smith. Alex Smith was taking the top off of that Packers defense. The Packers defense is just horrific. So, yeah, Clay Matthews got flagged for another one, but this one wasn't as nearly as game-changing or at least game-altering as the one against Minnesota, where it was like, that was it. That was the game. Game over. Packers kneeling it down, going home with the win. No, this one wasn't as egregious at the moment that it happened in the game. The story is now that you just can't hit people apparently anymore.
Yeah, the other part of that is that this hit actually had a little air of legitimacy to it as far as the way the rule is written about landing with body weight on the quarterback. That actually was.
This one was actually more to the letter of the rule, the bad rule, but this one was the one from the against Washington was more to the letter of the bad rule than the one against the Vikings. So
that's
yes.
The key is that this one is just like where else can he land? What is he supposed to do?
Yeah.
Whereas the one in week 2 was that was not a fucking flag by any stretch. That was just a – the ref just fucked that up. That's all that was.
Yeah, because he was laying on his legs and he propped himself up from not landing on him fully.
He wrapped an arm around his waist and almost laid him down gently and got flagged for roughing. It's like, what the hell else can he do to him?
But we're seeing this. I mean, did you see all the ones in the – what was it, the Monday night game? It was getting really bad too.
Oh, just back and forth, roughing the passer. One of them, Roethlisberger, got love tapped on his helmet with a little finger and went down like he got shot in the head and drew the flag with his acting.
I told you, if I was a quarterback, I would be, if there was a dude near me, I'm grabbing the jersey and just holding on and letting, you know, and like pulling him on top of me. Free 15 yards. Let's go.
Or you can do the Ben and just act like you just got killed. You can do the,
yeah.
Ben Roethlisberger is basically doing a Ric Flair. Like anyone that comes anywhere near him or touches him, he's just yelling in, like he's in just the greatest pain, like, ah! And letting the refs take over and call the penalties. It's just so bad. I don't know if it's going to be better either.
It's turning into soccer.
Do you see what he did to me?
Or it's the Dan Carpenter play from a couple of years ago all over again. You know, the kicker that gets, like, the guy runs into his leg and blows him up, and he just lays there like he's dying on the turf until he has to get right back up and kick the field goal.
Yeah. Yeah, that was memorable. That got an award after the season because his wife called, I think it was Richard Sherman that hit him, called him an animal, or this is what we do to animals on the farm or something like that. It's like, dude, your husband just flopped like he was Ronaldo. Shut the fuck up. Get out of here.
Yeah, I think he actually got the very first Antonio Brown's Grammy Award.
For great acting skills, you get the Grammy. Yeah. Every time you say that, that's just, I can't believe Pac-Man Jones is talking about someone getting a Grammy for acting. It's like, what?
You know, well, come on. It's an award.
It's a thing. It's an award thingy. You know what I was talking
about.
Like
giving a defensive player, offensive player of the year. It just doesn't happen.
He
wanted to give a guy a singing award for acting. It happened.
Only back
because Antonio Brown was clearly faking getting his head torn off.
Oh my God, that's the other part. No, he couldn't have been faking that because you could see on the replay he got his lights turned off. You could see the lights getting turned off in his head as he was out before he hit the ground. So no, that wasn't acting, idiot. That's the other part of it.
He was acting.
No,
it's all a ruse.
Right. So Aaron Rodgers now, that's another whammy that I put down. I finally went and picked the Packers because apparently he's just going to keep playing the whole year. And now as soon as I pick him, they go down. So now you
0-3 against the spread right now, 0-3 against the spread.
Yeah, but I don't think, did I pick them the first 2 weeks? I don't think I did.
No, I have had the Packers. I have bet against them all 3 weeks so far and won all three picks.
Yeah, we both had the Bears in week one.
We both had
Minnesota.
The Vikings
okay.
In week two. It was week three you had the Packers. You jumped off.
Yeah.
And I stayed. See, it's your move.
Yeah.
It just usually takes longer for this to build up.
That's what I was saying, is that I finally decided to pick the Packers, seeing that Aaron Rodgers is apparently going to just stay upright and keep playing. And now he's got a hamstring now, probably due to overcompensating for the really bad torn up knee that he's got.
Yeah.
So now I'm back to, I don't know what the hell to pick with the Packers anymore.
Yeah. And they're playing Buffalo. So
now I'm really not going to know what to do.
Yeah. Who knows what we're going to get on Sunday? Cause they're playing the Bills and the Bills. Yeah.
Yeah, that one, I officially have no idea. I can already tell you, whatever my pick is for that one, I'm just picking something.
Just to pick it. But it's not going to be a highlight game. I know that. So we're good.
Yeah, Burfict, it's funny you brought him up. because I don't think he would have let Christian McCaffrey run for a buck 85 like that, because he just lit up the Bengals on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see that coming. You had that one on me.
No. I didn't have it in that fashion, trust me.
Oh, okay. I was just glad that I actually had a week where I was where I actually picked up a game on you, because first couple of weeks it felt like a struggle, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I can do this. Oh yeah, I can have an okay week finally.
You had a very good first half of the day on Sunday. You've had the Giants over Houston, so Houston 0-3. They're done. They're Brady Quinn done.
I don't count them out. I mean, that division's going to be tough, though. That's the key, is they're still looking up at the Jaguars, maybe the win and ugly Titans, and don't know about the rest. And, hey, we talked about your lock. I had those Dolphins, and, man, if you can count on anything so far through 3 weeks, it's that every week the Raiders are going to blow leads in the second half because they can't get to the quarterback because they traded their best pass rusher. Murga.
Look, do you know how hard it is to find a good pass rusher in the NFL?
It's really hard.
Jay Gruden keeps telling me how hard it is. It's really difficult. God, I just wish I could find one. Just wish there was somebody. Just don't know how.
Anybody. Maybe we'll draft one with all of these high draft. Oh, wait, the Bears are halfway decent now that we gave them our best player. So those picks won't even be as good. But I'll tell you what's going to be really good, the Raiders' own pick. That's going to be really good.
Oh, wait, they did draft one several years ago, and he developed into an all-pro, and then they threw him away because he wanted to be paid.
But
how
when they're picking third,
paid?
Yeah, the Raiders are going to be probably picking third or fourth, so they'll get somebody decent.
Did you see some of the plays that the Dolphins were using to mount that comeback?
That was a game I stayed completely away from. I have not seen one highlight from that game. I knew what I saw what I needed to see. Raiders had the big lead and they blew it. And they blew it like convincingly. That went like way the other direction.
Some of the plays that the Dolphins were pulling off from underneath, one of the touchdowns, I believe, was a wide receiver option that he threw to somebody for a touchdown. There was some other there's a lot of razzle dazzle in that comeback. Plays that I was surprised. I only saw about a 1 or 2 minute highlight package of the game, but there were plays that you don't usually see teams pull off that are behind, that are trying to catch up to win a game. So that's what's stuck out to me. It struck me that Adam Gase is pulling these razzle dazzle plays to beat the Oakland Raiders from behind. And it felt to me like that was Adam Gase sort of telling the Oakland Raiders, hey, you guys, you stupid. You don't know what you're doing. You're not going to keep this lead. I'm going to pull these trick plays out on you, and we're going to come back using these dumbass options and razzle dazzle. That just looked like, I don't know. I'm certainly not saying the Raiders are going to go 0-16 or anything like that, but I think the league is kind of looking at the Raiders as just a joke right now. I think everyone's just laughing at what they're doing.
Yeah, they're one of the laughing stocks of the league, and they should be better. And clearly, offensively, they other than their first game, the second week they played more competently. This last game they played, so their offense is getting it done. They can't hold leads.
And didn't Gruden complain this week about Derek Carr was too aggressive or something? Didn't he just finish complaining?
Yeah,
after
he just told him he was a pussy. And passing up the right, basically what he said.
He pulled his punk card on him.
Yeah, and now he just rubbed it right back in his face.
And Carr responds, and he's more aggressive. And Gruden's like, "That's too aggressive. It really is Murga. It's what are you doing
Murga
up there, man?
Making the Raiders great again. That's what he's doing.
He
pisses
off
McCarron just waiting in the wings.
He's pissing off his franchise quarterback and might be greasing the wheels to have him leave to bring in A.J. McCarron as the starter. And that would be the height of Murga right there. Just get rid of all the good players so you can bring in the crap that are loyal to the guys that are loyal to you. That's the height of Murga. So maybe that's what's going on.
I'm telling you, he's going to run the, he's going to run that whole franchise right into the ground to then rebuild it.
I guess.
I just don't know if he's capable of this, because we've already pointed out he needs a ready-made team, a ready-made to win team, to have success. He doesn't have that.
I was thinking about you in a way you pretty much discredited his whole Super Bowl. When they were on Monday night, when they kept honoring Tony Dungy at halftime. And I'm like, hey, there's the guy that is the reason that John Gruden has a Super Bowl ring. There he is.
When I saw them interviewing him on the sideline, I thought the exact same thing. So I'm glad that I have, I'm glad that I have impacted your viewing experience by crapping all over the Super Bowl winning career of John Gruden.
Absolutely. As soon as I saw Dungy, I'm like, oh, there's the reason
Gruden
got a title.
There he is. And then Dungy left and then got his own.
That's right. One more note, and I'm pretty much finished with what I have. How troubling is it that Andrew Luck is not a threat downfield at all, to the point that Indianapolis has to pull him to put in Jack Brisket to throw a Hail Mary pass at the end of the game? What are we doing if we got a quarterback out there? It's almost like with the Titans and Mariota. What are we doing if we have a quarterback that can't throw? Because that's kind of important to the position.
Yeah, well, I mean, his injury history was pretty troubling anyways. I mean, what was it like? It was all shoulder and neck type stuff. So
yeah, when you,
I don't know, is he still trying to build up the arm strength? Because Andrew Luck, the last time I checked, had a pretty big arm. I guess not so much anymore.
He better be just going upstream, because if not, then he's shot.
Well, they didn't want to risk it. But I mean, if you're going to risk it throwing the ball deep, where they clearly knew, like from practice or any of that he couldn't do it, that maybe there's still more damage there than we just don't know about or we're going to find out about. But now if you're a defense, how can you take their deep ball seriously? You don't.
Exactly. You're looking at that going, well, we know he's not going to get that ball out there to T.Y. Hilton 50 yards downfield like he used to.
Just let that guy run around back there. You can't throw it to him.
Yeah, very, very troubling to me. Do you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, not really. I'm ready for bed, and I got this eye thing going on. My eyes just won't stop, like, watering and stuff. So I think I've hit the height of, like, allergy season or something. I don't know, because I was meant to do the show last night, and I was doing some cleaning around the house, and I didn't know if, like, some dust got into my eye or something from, like, the vacuum cleaner. Or I don't know what happened, but, like, my right eye swelled up really bad. It got all puffy and red, and it was, like, watering like crazy, and it was hard for me to see. And I mean, I probably still could have done the show, but I wouldn't have had any of my, you know, I usually have stuff up on the computer and material, and, you know, it would have been hard to do that with my eyes closed.
Well, I'm glad to know the nature of it now, that it was something maybe physical, because I was worried sitting there like, oh, all you texted me was, can't do the show tonight, my eye is blurry. And I'm having trouble seeing my computer screens.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, dude, are you stroking out on me? What the hell's going on? So I glad to hear it wasn't
was
anything
so
like
angry,
that.
Like Everton Griffin. Angry.
No.
Hulk it out.
Release some stress, dude. It's not that serious. No, I'm glad it wasn't anything like that.
No, I think it's I usually get fall seasonal allergies, but this would be, I usually get them mid-October, but it's so weird with this year the way it's been. But yeah, I don't know, I was doing a bunch of house cleaning yesterday and I'm thinking maybe I got some dust in my eye or something. So I was honestly, after I sent you that text, I was actually in bed and asleep by probably 8:15 last night, so I was really hoping that you got that, because by the I was like barely starting. I was starting to fall asleep when I got your text back. Like, you know, all right. I was like, oh, thank God, because there's no way I'm getting up and doing this show.
Yeah, I had the phone on silent, so I didn't get the text immediately. So luckily, you're lucky that I looked at my phone before I started setting up the show and getting ready to go on the air, because that was like the last thing I did before I started to set up.
Oh,
and
sure.
If I didn't do that, I would have been sitting there at 9 just waiting for you. So. That would have been interesting. All around there. Well, at that point, I would open up the phone and saw the text and go, okay, we're not having a show tonight. Goodbye.
That's
everybody.
Why he's not here.
We got the show on Wednesday night. We got it after after my bowling league, after somebody rolled a 300 on us tonight.
No way.
Yeah, it was one of those nights.
Oh. Yeah,
not only that, but I asked the guy, so, and he, gray-haired guy, so I'm thinking, this is like a regular thing for him, like this is 10th or 12th 300 game or something like that. So I asked him, hey, so how many 300s is that for you in your lifetime? And he holds up one finger, first one, and like, against us. Ain't that some shit?
Man. And then the worst part would be if you lost by like 9 pins.
No, we got trounced. But just the fact that somebody shot a 300 on us, and it's their leadoff guy, too. And it's like, God.
Not even the heavy hitter?
No, he's a first bowler. Just kept dropping it on the same spot and kept hitting them flush.
Yeah, usually it's those 4 or 5 guys you got to watch out for, not the person going first. That's usually one of your worst bowlers.
Right, they're using him as leadoff, and he was in the zone.
It's not your night when you got somebody throwing their first ever 300 against you. I have never seen a 300 game live.
That's the second one someone's dropped on us. Someone nailed us a couple of years ago.
Ouch.
You know what we named our team this year? We're so bad. We are by far the worst team in the league year after year. We're clearly up there just to get some exercise and have some fun and enjoy ourselves. But as far as like everyone else in the league, you got most teams have somebody that's averaging close to 200, something like that. We have nothing like that. I think I have the highest average on the team is like 150. So we decided to name our team this year Handicap Team, because every time somebody comes against us, they see the huge handicap that we have, and they're like, oh my God, we got to beat you guys. Bringing how many pins? Oh my God. So we just acknowledge the obvious, and now so we're Handicap Team. That's the name of our team this year.
Well, sometimes, though, it's hard to beat those teams with those huge handicaps.
That's what everyone says when they see our handicap, and they're like, oh my God, this is going to be so tough. We got to really be on tonight, because if we're not,
If anybody on the team with a huge handicap does anything at all, you got to work even harder.
Exactly. So we just acknowledge the obvious. The guy saw us in our handicap, and apparently he made the decision, you know what, I got to be perfect tonight. And damn it, in the first game, he was absolutely perfect. So
he overcame it all.
He sure did, by himself. So yeah. Richard Watts, congratulations on your first ever 300 games.
So this week, I need to do a Friday show.
Oh, okay.
I have to take my mom out of town most of next week. So I'm not looking forward to that, driving 3 days, not 3 days of driving, but driving somewhere on a day, being somewhere and then driving back the next day. So, my wife and I are actually going out on Saturday night, since I won't be home for much of next week. So Friday night, I'll need to do the show.
Gotcha. 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock, because I work late on Friday.
Gotcha. All right. So our week 4 pick show, as you just heard, will be 10 o'clock Central Time, 11 o'clock Eastern, this coming Friday night, the 28th. After we watch what should be hopefully a competitive Thursday night game tomorrow night between the Vikings and Rams. So we'll be getting ready for that. So unless you got anything else, I think we'll be calling it a night.
All right. I'm ready to go.
All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you all for listening, and be back here Friday night for our picks for week 4. A lot more numbers out of me. I got to get a lot more numbers and stats intense now as the season wears on, because I got to just rely on my numbers, because I get crazy like that as the season goes on. So we will see you all Friday night, and have a good one.